I literally don't think we've ever mentioned Newcastle. Honestly, that's sad.
So, I mentioned Swansea more times than Newcastle.
You know, I personally feel sports is heading into a dangerous future if state-run ownership is going to be allowed.
I think state ownership in general, irrespective of the country, I think is problematic.
Sports is living with corruption and greed. Things will go ahead, man. People will forget. That's the problem.
But for a club like Newcastle, to actually be able to attract top talent is not just the checkbook. They will have to have a top-notch manager.
Do you see Pep potentially just being like, chhod yaar, Newcastle?
I mean, oh my god, what a pick!
From Steve Bruce to Pep Guardiola, that's such a weird transition.
Tony Marshall scores again. That will be the first big name signing. Dude, getting 100 million for Martial for United, why not?
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of All About Sports, the podcast. You're joined by your usual host. We got Aniket.
What up, boys?
Mazar.
Hey there.
Shubham.
What's up, guys?
And myself, Rishabh. For those of you who don't know, we're a sports podcast for the fans and by the fans. Before we get into this week's episode, just a quick reminder on last week's episode. We did a kind of preview of the NBA season that's upcoming. There have been some moves that happened again this offseason. So do check out that episode on the new season preview. With that, let's get into this week's episode. A really, really hot week in the Premier League. Newcastle just got taken over in a massive, massive move to the Saudi Public Interest Fund, who earn 80%. That's really the group that everyone's talking about, the 20% that's held by other people no one's super concerned about. But that's the really big move, which actually pushes Newcastle to being the wealthiest club from a net worth of the ownership standpoint. So huge injection of money soon to come in Newcastle, obviously similar to what's happened to PSG in the past, something similar to what's happened to City in the years in the past as well. That's the topic for our entire conversation, just diving into what it means for Newcastle, what it means for the Premier League, and maybe more broadly, what it means for football. Maz, I'll go to you first. You're now our, I guess, UK correspondent on everything. What is the Newcastle perspective on this? What does it mean to be a Newcastle fan from the history of the club? And what has led to this moment, you know, from Mike, you know, from their ownership with Mike Ashley that ended, you know, some would say probably pretty sourly. How have we gotten to this point?
Firstly, Krishna, just because I'm in the UK doesn't mean I know everything about Newcastle. I know nothing about Newcastle.
Mas, we're expecting you to be the new Fabrizio Romano. That is why we hired you for this.
But no, I'm actually right opposite West Ham United. So I'm not sure I can talk about Newcastle. But no, but jokes apart, Newcastle, when we started watching football like properly, Newcastle, let's face it, have always been a highly reputed team. They're one of the big names. I mean, Goal had also made Newcastle extremely famous, the movie Santiago Munez and his story. And everyone at some point was like, yeah, I want to play for Newcastle, man. Everyone wants to be part of the tune. But seriously, Newcastle has a history. They have one of the most loyal fans. St. James's Park formerly known as St. James's Park, now Sports Direct Arena, was absolutely bouncing. Their fans are extremely loyal, 50,000 plus filling in the stadium. It was a vibe to go to watch a game in Newcastle and watch the team play. And they were like the exclusive team there, unlike in London where you'll find this diversity. So many clubs that it's not even funny. You'll see three stadiums in a matter of 15 minutes. So the culture is so different there. So obviously ardent followers of the club. When we grew up, like I said, they in the 2001-2002 season, they were actually title challengers. They ended up finishing fourth. They made the Champions League qualification. They were extremely successful under Bobby Robson, who managed the club till like 2004. So I think 5 years he was there. Then there was this decline. They had signed Michael Owen, which was their record fee back then. So you knew that they could get those big players. Obviously, the Premier League all-time scorer is also Alan Shearer. Things started going down south when Mike Ashley really took over. And that's the entire issue. Now, the problem with Mike Ashley taking over was he came in and was very similar to every typical big corporate owner in a lot of ways, right? Just interested in money, probably buying a club for status, also to just take money out of that club because it's there is so much money in the game, in the sport, in the team, ownership if you own them generally. So he didn't invest in the club. I think he only invested, what, 40 million net into the club, which is absolutely ridiculous. Like, it makes even United look good in a lot of ways with what the Glazers have done. So after all of these things, the Saudi takeover was like imminent for the longest time. And even though Mike Ashley put in the club on sale before, and the Saudi takeover was supposed to happen, I don't know why it fell through. There were lots of rumors around that. But finally, it's here. And I'm saying this from a neutral standpoint right now. If I were a Newcastle fan, I would be absolutely buzzing. Not because of how much money is going to come into the club. I think it's more so just a relief that they have as fans that Mike Ashley's out of the way now. Like, I can imagine United fans taking the streets in Manchester when the Glazers leave or sell the club as well. It's, I can just imagine the absolute joy, because let's face it, Newcastle aren't asking or demanding a Premier League title or whatever. They aren't and even expecting to win an FA Cup at this point. But a lot of the fans felt that they will never see Newcastle do anything substantial or something great to win or even challenge for a title in their lifetime. And now that's potentially a reality. And even if it's not, just having some people who actually might put in some money and invest, even if they do not care about the club, says a lot about the team. So absolutely happy for fans in general, because I feel, again, football wins. And yeah, that's and what I have to say.
I think that the proof of how he looked at it as a business is Mike Ashley himself was so ardently pushing for this move. Like, he wanted to get out of the club, and he bought the club. I think the Athletic shared the numbers. He bought the club at 134 million and has sold it for 300 million. So he's almost doubled, you know, how much he's gotten, how much he's paid. So I think he was pretty happy with the payday, and it was pretty evident by the end that he saw it pretty much as a business. He wanted to, and he maintained a reasonably profitable business, but without much success for the team. And I don't think there were any hard feelings about him wanting to move on. Malu, I wanted to come to you next. Now, this is a massive move for the Premier League. They actually become the wealthiest. They're the wealthiest from a net worth perspective, the wealthiest owners in football, even overtaking PSG, which is the Qatari Investment Authority. The Qatari Investment Authority is second, and Sheikh Mansour is third, who owns Manchester City. So they far and away are like the largest owners, and obviously, given they're they're more of an entity than a single owner, their value is massive. Malu, what does this mean to the Premier League, and how threatened should all the big flight teams be? I mean, if the Super League teams really thought they had a kind of strong hold on the Premier League, this is in the most direct threat to that maybe we've ever seen.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. But before I jump into what it means for the Premier League, I think just touching upon a little bit on Mike Ashley, like you said, he bought the club for 134, he sold it for 300. So that's obviously a good profit. And this guy, like you guys already mentioned, he wanted to get out of the club when Newcastle got relegated. He was ready to sell for 100 million. And even like 2-3 years back, he was when there was interest from Saudi, he was ready to sell, but I think he was just waiting to get a better price. And also another thing is when he renamed the club to the stadium to Sports Direct Arena, the sort of impact it would have had on his brand, Sports Direct, which is, it has a massive chain of shops in the UK, maybe across Europe, but I know for a fact in the UK. So
yeah, I just bought a basketball from them, actually.
Yeah, see, there you go. So just in business sense, not only has he made money on the books, but also the brand that he's built through the stadium. So for him, it's been a good business venture is what I'll imagine. And talking in terms of the Premier League, see, now these guys have come in. I think their net worth, something like that, of the fund is $320 billion. I'm not 100% sure of the number, but I think it's in that
region. That's the number I have too, correct.
Yep. Yeah. So I think it's in that region. And the second one is PSG, where they are nowhere even close to the sort of money that these guys have. So obviously, in terms of the money power the flexing that's going to happen is going to be insane. We can already see like memes or rumors or whatever of Mbappe and Martial and Haaland wearing Newcastle jerseys. And I tell you what, that could actually be a reality in the distant future. It could possibly happen. We already know that these guys, they have a 200 million net transfer budget over a span of 3 seasons. I think every club in the Premier League will definitely keep an eye on Newcastle's transfer activity in Jan, but definitely in the summer. There will be big movements. But the question remains is, how successfully do they manage to not just bring in big fancy players, but a good manager who can keep the team, you know, functioning properly? Because Man City's takeover and the way they've performed over the last 10 years, 15 years is a very good example of how do you not just influx money into the club, but use it properly. You have some clubs that have gone wrong also, like, for example, Zenit. I think they had Russian ownership or again, Saudi, Chinese ownership. Massive money put into the club. The club got screwed up. I think even Monaco in France, massive money put in. They bought a shit ton of players for expensive prices. The club is not functioning the way it should. So it could be a horror story, but obviously it most likely looks to be a very good takeover for the club, for the fans. And yeah, the Premier League should definitely be threatened. You could probably have now the big seven or something.
And Malu, like you said, sorry, just to reiterate that, exactly like you said, their net worth is £320 billion. The next is the Qatari Investment Authority, who owns PSG, which is £220 billion. The next highest is Sheikh Mansour in Manchester City, who's just £21 billion. So it massively trumps what anyone has even in the Premier League. And when we think of, and I think it's just a matter of, you know, again, entity versus a person. At the end of the day, one a single person is not going to be able to compete with this entity.
But I tell you, just one more thing.
In the last 5 or 6 minutes, I've heard two very interesting things. One is Krishnan saying 21 billion is just 21 billion. All right. And the other thing is, Malu, while mentioning all those players who are getting linked with Newcastle, said Martial also. What? No. Martial hasn't been linked with any club for the last 2 years, okay?
No, he has with Madrid.
He has.
Because of
his
wife.
Desperate. And if we get a chance to sell Martial to people for whom basically money is not a factor. Dude, getting 100 million for Martial for United, why not?
Malu, nicely, what a fan, bro. Nicely sneaked Martial into that list.
Malu and Mazar are changing their stat on Martial. Now they're going to start saying damn nice things about Martial on this podcast. Suddenly, all of a sudden, their tone is going to change.
Yeah, hopefully.
He scored a goal in the last game.
This is exactly what I did when Everton were interested in Iwobi. I'm like, oh my god, this guy, player, bro. He's 40 million, let's go.
Yeah, so Mazar and I will keep praising Martial, hoping that the new Saudi owners watch our podcast and they get influenced to buy him.
Hopefully they can take over our podcast.
but just coming to the threat to the Premier League, I do think it's a threat, but I would also like you guys to give your opinion on this, that it's not going to be that easy. Like, just because they have deep pockets, they can just come and spend how much of money they want, because there are strict financial fair play guidelines. The club has to operate at a certain amount of, I think, maximum net loss spread over 3 seasons can be only like 15-20 million. So if the club wants to spend big, okay, right now they have the 200 million net that they can spend, but they have to build a big brand, getting a lot of commercial sponsors in to show the books that, listen, this is the amount of money we are making, so we can give those salaries and spend in the transfer market. So it's not like just because you have big owners that now, you know, we can buy whoever the fuck we want. It's still like going to be a process.
And I think like Mazar was saying, you know, I think Newcastle, both the management and fans, are pretty realistic about this. I think even the management said, like, it's a 5 to 10 year timeline. We're saying in 5 to 10 years, we'll start competing. That's the goal. And I think when you're investing this much, that should be at least at some point you have to start being successful. But they're being honest and saying it's going to take 5 to 10 years for us to get it in place. And I think fans, like Mazar said, they just want like consistent success. They should not be a club. They have too much history to be a club that's gotten relegated in the last 10 years. So I think even the fans are realistic of the fact that, like, we just want consistent success and we know it won't come right off the bat, but let's be smarter about our moves. Let's be smarter about our managers and let's have the money to actually compete. It's an interesting one. And Gui, I want to go to you this, because we've talked a lot about you know, technically what happened and the moves. Wait, how do you just feel about this whole thing? Because I'm a little confused. I'll be very honest. On one hand, it just seems like, you know, like City, it's going to be this huge money influction where, you know, they're going to start at some point buying these massive players and just becoming this huge team out of nowhere. But it doesn't seem like this is a team that almost deserves it. You know, I would love to have seen a Leicester get this kind of money. I would have loved to seen like an Everton get this kind of money. But in general, Guy, how do you feel about this? You know, it's a weird thing. They're not a well-managed club. They've not performed consistently. What emotions?
So rude. It's like so simply rude for no reason. But now here's what I'd like to highlight, right? People think that Manchester City is a kind of an overnight success. The first time they really were successful, I get that fifth was a successful spot for them in the first 3 years. But for the first 3 years, there were nothing clubs still. In spite of having Mark Hughes, having Mancini, I mean, that was a turning point, right? Like, you had money from day one, but it still took you 3 years with a good coach, with a good set of players, with an accomplished team. All right? It's not that easy. And Manchester City, let's be honest, they spent like wild, right? It wasn't even, there was no, I don't think there was any diktat at that point as to how much you can spend, what you can do. And I think the other clubs weren't in the same spot as they are today in terms of transfer policy, aggressive buying and things like that. Manchester City were outright the hardest players in the transfer window. Let's not talk about on the pitch. They weren't that great for the first two seasons, but they were just probably better than everyone else. So I think, to be very fair, I don't think Newcastle can get a kick about in terms of their transfers as well as Manchester City did. But yeah, soon enough, if they're smart and if they don't hand out 8-year contracts to their managers like they were in the past, actually, it'll all be fine. Like, I remember there was a time where they gave Pardew an 8-year contract in spite of like general lack of happiness with Pardew's team, right? He did the whole I'm going to have an influx of French players. They did one and a half season, which was kind of fascinating,
dude. But those Dembaba Papi Cisse combinations, dude, that one or two seasons that it was. Whew.
Exactly. That's my point. Johan Kabay, Mathieu Debuchy, and I'm like, what is happening? Is this like north of England? Is it? Or is it not?
Listen.
This is so hypocritical. I was going to say.
It's nonsensical. Arsenal at one point was France.
Okay. Fine, but it was in a phased manner, right? There was France, there was some other, like, there was Spain also, there was little, like, and then it became, like, all French, okay? Let's be honest, they had to phase out the English from France. They had to phase it out.
This is questionable. Gui, I'm an Arsenal fan, and this seems a bit hypocritical, huh, boss? This French accusation is...
Okay, it lasted for more than one season. Okay, now is it okay?
Yeah. That's fair.
So I don't think they're going to have as easy a path to the top as Man City did. Like, they got really lucky in terms of having Mark Hughes, Mancini, Pellegrini, and then Pep. All right. And they had a fabulous set of players which got replaced every year as if this were a consulting firm and the attrition rate is 25%. But players in, out, managers in, out, they could do whatever they wanted. And walk away with it. Like, so I don't know if it's still a possibility in terms of how competitive other clubs have gotten in the transfer market in terms of players and in terms of managers, right? This was not the case when, like, 5 years back. How many years has it been since Pep took over? Five?
This is fifth. Five now, yeah. I think, yeah.
Yeah, he's won 4 and 5. So 4 and 5, yeah.
Exactly.
That sounds right.
So it's just a very different scenario as to when Man City started this.
I've got to just come back to what Shubham said, like, about, you know, these players potentially going to Newcastle and stuff. Yeah, obviously now money is a huge thing and everyone would like to ideally want to stay in England for various reasons. Players are now preferring to be in the UK rather than other parts now, given that Spain is going through its downtime right now. do you think, let's not forget, Pep is probably going to be calling it a time. Do you see Pep potentially just being like, chhod yaar, Newcastle? Do you actually see that as a possibility? I mean, I realistically don't see that happening. But if Pep goes, then you could actually see Haaland, Mbappe, not Mbappe maybe, but like whoever else is available. whoever else is available going to Newcastle. I was just thinking aloud. So what do you all think about that?
I think so actually, Muzz. Because see, I don't think Pep ever joins a rebuilding organization. That's not his vibe. He doesn't like joining rebuildings. But I think after he leaves City, he'll take a couple of years off. And by that time, Newcastle will be in like pretty decent shape. So I think there's a, there's a pretty good chance. It'll be weird. From Steve Bruce to Pep Guardiola, that's such a weird transition. I can't fathom it.
And like, what's funny is, as players, they were poles apart. Like, Steve Bruce was like insanely good. Pep was also good. Let's not get that wrong. Pep was also good, but Steve Bruce was surreal, man.
Tell you what, one thing I think, like, for example, if you take Man City and now even Newcastle, as compared to clubs like United, Liverpool, Chelsea, yeah, sort of, and Arsenal. So these historic clubs, no, they still have a glamour to it, an enticement to it that players want to play for them. Now, obviously, players would want to play for Newcastle and City because of the money, but it's not like a Chelsea or a United don't have the money to pay salaries, at least. Maybe transfer will be a different thing. But for a club like Newcastle to actually be able to attract top talent is not just the checkbook. They will have to have a top-notch manager. Like, for if you see Man City's tactic, having Pep for the last 5 years has been like having the biggest golden egg they could have ever had in their history, which has really transformed the club. And before that, hats off to Mancini because he did exceptionally well. But for Newcastle, if they think of it as a 5, 10, 15-year plan, they need to have one of the best managers in the world because everything is not the checkbook. It's also about the players wanting to play with that manager, the manager having the ability to manage such big egos if you're bringing in such big players. So yeah, I think they'll have to be very smart with their coach and the entire backroom staff.
And I think they have a slight advantage, I feel, over City, because I feel like Newcastle, at least for English talent, it is a known name. Like, it has a bit of history. Maybe not globally, maybe not the rest of Europe, but at least within England, I think they still are a reasonably big name. So they have even that, not they even have a slight leg up, not compared to United, obviously, or like even Arsenal, but compared to, say, a City, they have a slight leg up, you know, from where City started, maybe. But guys, so, you know, it took some time, right? This was a bit of a long process. It was a 1 year process. It actually got rejected initially.
Longer than 1 year. I think there've been talks with Mike Ashley for I think 2-3 years now.
Krishnan, you're on mute.
I can't hear you, Krishnan.
Oh, sorry. I went from going off mute to on mute. Thank you. The Zoom world. But no, you are right. I think he's been looking to sell it for a long time. I think Saudi's interest is a little bit more recent. And I think when the Premier League actually took it, I think they took the initial bid to the owners, it was pushed back, I think, at the start of 2020. It was pushed back, the ownership, basically all 19 club owners, other 19 club owners saying, nope, we don't want this. And I think it was basically three reasons that were the reasons why this didn't go through. Number one reason, I think, is what we've spoken about already. There was, which I personally think is one of the major reasons the club owner said no, they might mask it as different things, which is the threat that it is to the other teams, because it would be this massive team that would grow and it'd be a threat to the other teams. The second thing, which is an interesting one, was more of a commercial reason, which is BN Sports. I don't actually know how to pronounce them, but BEIN Sports,
Talk about the broadcasters.
Correct. Yep. The broadcasters didn't actually have the rights to broadcast in Saudi, and they've had some conflicts since the Qatar Saudi tensions, where they couldn't, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, they couldn't actually broadcast in Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia actually accused them of something in terms of information transfer as well. That meant that they didn't even try. There were some concerns that they didn't even try stopping people who were illegally streaming, like, through BN Sports, and not really looking to cut down on them. So BN was like very much against this. They didn't want to go through. But a lot changed. And the third thing, which is basically the thing that I think is being talked about most from a news perspective, is the fact that it's Saudi ownership, right? And the fact that it's owned by Saudi Arabia, they are an investment fund that functions independently from the Saudi Arabian government, but it's a little bit unclear. There's obviously some overlap. They are government owned. So Malu calls BS for those of you who didn't see the sign. So guys, I want to talk a little bit about this because this is an interesting conversation that's happening across sports. And the initial concerns were basically that, you know, they have Saudi Arabia historically has a terrible humanitarian record. They're buying this club and it kind of, when you allow them to own this club, it kind of overrides or it maybe puts aside the humanitarian concerns and honestly gives approval to a country which has had this past. One, what are your thoughts on, in general, club owners having and club ownership having this, you know, problematic history or problematic past? And two, do you really believe they're completely detached? Because I really think for the past year, they've said it's not detached. Then the Saudi government even spoke to Boris Johnson in UK and some of the Premier League just overrode the decision and said, nope, we've now been convinced that they are completely independent. So what are your guys' thoughts on both of these pretty contentious, or you know, issues with the ownership?
Anyone wants to go?
No, go. I'll go last. I have a lot to say about this. That's why.
I personally feel sports is heading into a dangerous future if state-run ownership is going to be allowed to buy sports teams. Now, the reason I think like that is, especially when you talk about Saudi, like you mentioned, when a state has humanitarian issues or whatever other issues with a lot of other countries or with whatever policies they have internally, and then they come out in the forefront and they buy institutions which have major impacts on cultural or social in the society, it makes a big difference. I came across a very interesting podcast. Now, see, this is, I'm just letting my imagination run wild, but hear me out. I came across a very interesting podcast where they said that the new form of warfare is social media and propaganda. So when state-run ownership comes into a picture where they start buying these institutions which have major impacts on society and culture, it becomes a propaganda channel through social media, through whatever forms of communication that they choose. And that can be used in a way to make people believe into seeing something which is not the truth. It's just a perception, but it's not the truth. So for example, like if China was to come in and buy an IPL team, for our Indian viewers to give you some context, if China, a communist government, coming in to buy an IPL team and running an IPL franchise in the IPL, obviously the way they would communicate would be very different to what actually goes on in China, to perhaps mask some of the issues so that the world sees them in a different way. So I think if this carries on happening where questionable states start buying football clubs or any clubs across the world, I think that could be a major problem in sports. And secondly, I also feel, you know, like now with the sort of money that's being introduced in sports, I think it's a bit too crazy. And I think we should go back to the time where salaries were capped. But that's for another perhaps podcast or a debate. But yeah, I think that this could be like potentially long term into the future an issue.
Shubham, sorry, before you go ahead, Shubham, you've given us a new topic for another week as well. Perfect.
And my take on this, on what Malu, first of all, again, Malu brings up such points that I have, and something else only starts running in my mind. So much problematic ownership in IPL already. Okay, even as an example, as a hypothetical, I don't want to think of this. IPL ownership as it is problematic. But yeah, so coming to capped salaries, also great idea. Just saying, remove the draw of money from sports and let's see what happens. But yeah, sports has been heading in for, I think, what, last decade and a half, heading into a very money-driven arena, right? IPL literally handed BCCI so much power, right? Because it drives viewership and money. Similarly, the Prem is leaps and bounds ahead of the other leagues in terms of viewership and hence what power it commands. Investing money, not such a bad idea in sports anymore because you know that there is some outlet. Like, I think the top six teams, all owned by private owners who are larger than life in the Prem again. it has caused enough drama in the last, what, 6 months as it is in the ESL and stuff like that. And I think it has room for more. Like, let's there's going to be more in terms of if you just keep letting this happen, fine. I mean, I don't see really anyone stopping it. Like, what is going to put a cap to this? Who's going to say no?
Money as long as there's greed, people.
Yeah, money makes the world go around. Like, you can't help it.
And I think, you know, Malu, you hit a really good point of, and I think it reiterates the same thing, right? I think there are a lot of problematic owners and we should probably, you know, look to fix it. But it's a very different thing when it's a state-owned, because state is fundamentally...
Dude, it's a different ballgame.
It's completely different. It's completely different. And it's the perfect point. I completely agree. I think state ownership in general, irrespective of the country, I think is problematic, you know. And then obviously when you add in, you know, some of the additional implications when it comes to Saudi Arabia, I think it adds even more... complexity. Maz, I know you were revving to talk about this, so I'll hand it off to you and just go for it.
Three things that I wanted to highlight. I actually made notes of it while you guys were talking because they all came to me at that point in time. Shubham touched upon it. The Qatar World Cup. So much of controversy around the entire thing. It's still going ahead, right? FIFA itself is a corrupt organization in a lot of ways. The UEFA is corrupt. The Premier League is corrupt. What is not corrupt now? I mean, it's football is living with that. Sports is living with corruption and greed. Greed is the key word over here. Things will go ahead, man. People will forget. That's the problem. Saudi ownership also coming in. Yes, it's a problem. But my problem with this entire thing is the PL signing off with it. Why did the Premier League sign off with it? It's so much money for them, potentially. It brings in so much potential money, so many more sponsorships potentially. Saudi Telecom Company, STC, such a big company with bucket loads of cash just sitting there. Again, Saudi owned only, I believe, government owned only. Money is going to flow in. Everyone's going to make money. And Premier League clubs are not against it because of the humanitarian rights, no matter what they may say. They are scared and afraid that they're going to lose their power because they've seen it happen. After Etihad came in and City Group came in, City have dominated world football. I'm talking about world football because all their 10 franchises have done supremely well across the world. Mumbai City FC also won the Indian Super League. So all of these teams are doing exceptionally well across the board. They've set up a very comprehensive system that is working. So their success on the pitch, their success off it, there's success everywhere. Money's flowing in. Everyone's happy. Their fan base is going up. That's what they are scared of. Another Manchester City in the making. Highly likely, obviously, with so much cash, how do you stop them? So I think the PL is more worried. The Premier League clubs are worried about this power dynamic shift because it's like the ESL, but in another way, if you know what I mean. Like, I don't want to compare the two, but... So the problem is not that the Premier League is against it. It's their right to be against it. But the principle is what is wrong. And that's why I just find it like, really, I can't wait for this to see how this plays out in the end.
No, and you make a great point. I completely agree. I think the PL owners are full of shit. I don't think they are as concerned, like you said, about the humanitarian ownership. I think they just like they are concerned with the complete power shift that's going to happen. I think that's completely fair. And you make a great point, Maz. You know, all is sort of forgiven. You're right, because I think when we go down this road of like, oh, you know, we shouldn't have problematic owners. There are a shit ton of problematic owners. No one has questioned the shit Roman Abramovich does at the back end. No one questions that shit. So the concern is less about problematic, because there are lots of problematic owners, and more like Malu was saying, again, if it's a state owned, it's just a different dynamic that's weird and messy and complicated. And that's actually what I think ended up getting it pushed through. It's because governments got involved. It's because the Saudi government spoke to Boris Johnson, and literally it felt like it wasn't overnight. It was over a year. The PL categorically said, we're not letting this go through. And exactly 1 year later said that. The prime reason they gave was, we feel like it's too close to the Saudi government. And exactly 1 year later said, actually, we feel it's not that close to the Saudi government. So, you know, once political pressure starts to come in, it becomes very complicated. And like you said, Maz, it's going to cause increased tension. We've already seen some of the tensions caused with the NBA, with Chinese broadcasting, and this is on a whole other level, right? So it's going to be Very, very interesting.
You know, in fact, what you said, no, it's. I totally believe. I don't think the takeover is very, it not completely down to sporting reasons. There's a lot of politics, diplomacy involved. And I tell you what, you never know in the future, maybe because of this takeover and the sort of money that's going to be influx into the UK economy, the UK and Saudi, they might have like some sort of trade routes or something like that developing between them, free trade or some shit like that, you know. You never know. So this is way beyond what we can imagine. What we read in the papers is just like feeding us the amount of information they want to give us. But what happens behind the scenes, this is way bigger than what we can think of.
Exactly. It's all the fake news.
And that's exactly it, Malu. I've never heard this term. I told y'all even before this call, I've never heard this term, but this term sports washing that's come up in this context. And I think that's exactly what this is, Malu. It's shying away from talking about the concerning things or controversial things going on in the back by kind of talking about the excitement of investing in a new club and bringing in new players. And it's exactly what's happening here.
Sorry, Krishna, just wanted to add one last point. Let's not forget what is 300 million for the Saudi prince. What is 300 million for him? So to buy Newcastle is literally like, oh, okay, I woke up today. I felt like spending a bit of money. Let's go shopping. Oh, yeah. Newcastle United sounds interesting. Clicks on buy and buys it.
It'll probably be like, I woke up today. I've grounded one out of my 100 sons for the week because he's misbehaved. His 1 week grounded allowance is 300 million. Chalo, aaj Newcastle kharidte.
It's something like that. It's obviously not like they care about the club, not like they're probably going to make money out of this also. Like, there's no sort of this takeover makes no sense to me. Absolutely no sense. At least City had an agenda and a plan. They wanted to create a powerhouse in football. Saudis never expressed any sort of excitement about football or anything for that matter. So it just doesn't make sense.
Yep, that's a great point. I think moral of the story is, you know, mom, dad, please increase my pocket money. I think that's what we've taken away from this. But with that, guys, it's back with the four, which means we're back with another quiz session. Guys, it's all about money in Newcastle, which is a weird combination. We've not heard about those two teams, you know, those two things in association.
I've never even heard of Newcastle on this podcast.
I don't know if we've ever discussed Newcastle.
I literally don't think we've ever mentioned Newcastle. Honestly, that's sad.
It is a strange thing now that I think about
only
it.
In the first mentioned... only in the second episode when we discussed the Premier League top 10, that was it.
So, I mentioned Swansea more times than Newcastle.
I think that's about
it. And Brighton in the last couple of weeks.
I think it's all about a change, guys. It's all about a change. But with that, guys, let's get into it. First question, money-related question. I think we mentioned at least a couple of these people on these calls. Who are the three richest owners in the Premier League? I'll take the names or the clubs. So either one is fine, but three richest. Gui, I'll go with you first. And in order, you have to say in order.
After the Newcastle takeover, right?
Newcastle takeover. Excluding Newcastle. Okay.
Man City, Chelsea.
And this is all based on, three richest owners, by the way. All based on the owners who are the three richest owners.
And I'm wondering, I think the Glazers have more money than the Kroenkes, no? No? So I'm just going to say the Glazers. Yeah. United.
Okay. Malu, Maz.
Mazar.
I'm going last.
The three of us actually colluded earlier before this call to make Mazar go first, and I totally fucked it up in the order that I went. I got confused.
Okay, I'll go. Man City. So Roman Abramovich. Man City, then Etihad, then Roman Abramovich, Chelsea, Arsenal, the Kroenkes. Then I can give you the next two also. If I get bonus points only.
Yeah, you get one bonus point.
No
bonus points. Actually, we can't afford Mazar to get bonus points. No, Mazar, no bonus points.
So my answer is Man City, Chelsea, Arsenal.
It's an optimal strategy, but guys, no fears. You get as many points as the number you got right. Gui, unfortunately, as you probably expect, if Mazhar has given a different answer from you, you know you're wrong already. Gui, 2 points. Mazhar Balu, 3 points. It is, as you said, Manchester City, then Chelsea with Roman Abramovich, and then Arsenal with Stan Kroenke. So,
and then it's Villa. And then it's Villa.
Oh, damn. I didn't know that, actually. I didn't know Villa was...
Yeah, it's Villa, and then it's Wolves.
So, guys, so... You know, everyone got a few points in there. Mazhar, of course, knew way more. Fortunately, we did not afford him any additional points for that. But guys, so this one, the order actually doesn't matter for the next question because I'm not allowing people to use the same answer. Once Sheikh Mansour took over, City obviously made a bunch of signings. Name, each of y'all just needs to name one of the first 10 signings that Manchester City made after Sheikh Mansour took over. Any one of the first 10 signings. Adebayo, okay. And tell you what, I'll give you, allow you all to even answer. You can give two answers, and even if one of them is right, you get a point. So you can give two answers, but no overlapping. Adebayo is a great answer. Banter.
I mean, oh my God, what a pick! I'm going to go with Robinho.
Okay.
And I'm allowed another, right?
Yes, and it just one has to be right.
Oh, so you can give two answers and one has to
be right. Answers and just one has to be right. But you don't get two if both are right, because I know Mazhar is going to get two. So you have to get... Mazhar, what are you thinking? You seem contemplative.
I'm confused a bit, but I know one. I know a couple. I think I know a couple, but I'm not sure about the second one. Okay. Craig Bellamy.
I have to give only one.
Craig Bellamy. Okay. Okay.
And I think, was it? I think Shea Given, but I just need one, right? So, but yeah, I'll say Shea Given for the other one.
Okay. Malu, who's your second? Who's the second pick?
I think I'll just stick with Adebayo.
Just Adebayo. Malu going with the risky strategy of just one, which didn't pay off. He's not in the first 10.
What?
He's not in the first 10. So the first 10. So Gui... You got Rubinho right. Mazhar, you got both right. Craig Bellamy and Shea Given. So the first 10, I don't know if this was the order, but Rubinho, Wayne Bridge, Craig Bellamy, Nigel De Jong, Shea Given, Gunnar Nielsen, I don't know who that is, Gareth Barry, Rocky Santa Cruz, Stuart Taylor, and surprisingly, the person no one mentioned, Carlos Tevez, but I think he was one of the he was the 10th, maybe.
Oh, I thought it was the same year. Fine.
Yeah. But great, great picks. Gui, Muzz, you get a point each. Balu, nothing on this one. But guys, we're talking about money. So let's stick with money. We've talked a little bit about the managers as well in the Premier League. You talked a little bit about, you know, they needing to bring a manager in. Can you name as many as you can of the top three richest managers in terms of how much they're earning annually? So I'm sure they get a lot in sponsorships and shit. But I'm just saying how much they earn. I'll give a hint. The top person in this list is not in the Premier League. It's not in the Premier League. And all three have been with their clubs for at least 3 seasons, at least 4 seasons, actually. Yeah.
Okay, I'll go first. Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, you get the point if you're in the right order as well. It has to be in the right order as well. Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Which is why, but just so note, number one is not in the Premier League.
Right. This is a tough one. I don't even know what to guess.
Do you want to go first? You want to go first?
I think I might give out a good name, so I don't want to go first.
And I don't even know who's first.
Yeah, I have no idea who's first, dude. That's the problem. The first one is the problem. Fine. Zizou.
Okay.
Klopp. And 4 years, you said, right?
Yeah.
Zizou, Klopp, Pep.
Okay, and I'll let you redo your one because it's an active manager. It's an active manager. The first one.
Oh, okay.
Come on.
All are at least four.
Come on. Think. I can think of only one name.
So go now, give your answer now then.
Yeah, bro.
This is I'm not...
Okay, chalo, Gui, if you get that fine. One, we'll protect that one for you. Because I don't think anyone had an answer, to be fair, right? We'll protect that one for Gui. That's not fair.
Simeone.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Klopp, so Pep.
Simeone, Klopp, Pep. Okay. Malu, what are you thinking?
See, I don't know number one.
Okay.
And I don't know if Simeone would be number one, because I would be really surprised if he's being paid more than
Klopp
and Pep. So I'm just leaving my number one. See, the Bayern manager also, I think last season he left the club. I think
Hansi Flick, manager. Yeah. Yeah, he's gone. And he wasn't there for 4 years. The thing is, so only Simeone actually fits that bill.
But I'll be surprised if he's paid more than Klopp and Pep. So second and third is Klopp and Pep.
Surprising. It's surprising, but this was the only name I could think of. So
no, actually, no, that's Bayern, a very good guess.
Bayern, Bayern Dortmund, no. PSG, no. Okay,
no.
Let's
Juventus,
let's
no.
Beat Krishnan. Let's try and beat Krishnan. Okay, Juventus, no.
Barcelona, no.
Real Madrid, no.
It could have been Zizou, but Zizou's gone. So
other than City and Liverpool, none of the clubs in the Premier League. Even AS Roma, Mourinho has just signed with them, so it's not 4 years.
Chelsea, as much as they can pay, Tuchel has signed one season back.
Yeah, so it's not possible only.
It
so
has
I
to
think
be
second
Simeone.
And third is, I think second and third is Klopp and Pep.
Hey, one second. As long as he's not picked, like, but even Xavi hasn't managed in Qatar for.
No, no, Europe. All three are Europe.
Okay.
Should I give it? Should I? Are we?
Give it. Okay, so we've all settled on Klopp and Pep.
So Klopp and Pep. It's actually Simeone. So it is Simeone, Pep, and then Klopp.
Okay, so.
So Gui gets a point. Gui gets a point for that one. But all of y'all had the same logic. The logic was absolutely correct. I was surprised too, honestly, to see Simeone, which is why I gave the hint of not PL, because I would not have guessed it's Simeone first either, to be very honest with you. Depending on how we finish on points, we'll see. If it's low on points on everyone, and if these questions are too harsh, maybe everyone gets 2 points. Because I think it's a very small difference. It's like 1 million or 2 million between Pep and Klopp. So Klopp probably gets like a fancy dinner every year that they take him out, and probably they spend about 1 million. okay. So under Mike Ashley, he's taken over in 2007. What was the highest Premier League finish Newcastle was had? That's 1 point. And bonus point if you know which season it was. Or what's the highest finish they've had basically since 2007? Another hint was it was under Alan Pardew.
8th in 15, 16. I don't even know which year Alan Pardew was managing the club. I just know that he was. And 8th is also a very wild guess. 8th in 15, 16.
Okay. Sorry, one other bonus question for this one as well. Gwengu, you can answer this as well. Who was the top scorer for Newcastle that season? The hint is we've discussed it. We've mentioned this person on the podcast so far.
Demba.
Okay. Well, Muzz, what do you think?
Yeah, that should be him only.
So you said 8th, 2015-16, Demba Ba. Right.
Let's make it 6th, because I think they had a Europa League run also. So 6th in 15-16.
Okay. And Dembaba. Okay.
So I know which year it was.
Is what I wanted to.
Yeah, because I remember they played in Europe one season. But I don't know if it was 15.
Bro, England is in Europe, so every season they play in Europe.
I actually know this answer. I think I remember this answer because I know which season it was and it hurts bitterly. That's why.
So I think I think they were 5th for sure. Mazar is saying it hurts bitterly.
That's a big one.
I shouldn't have said that.
So Mazar is saying it hurts bitterly, so that it has to be a season where United got fucked.
I mean, we've been fucked for years now, so.
No, but it hurts bitterly. But it has to be like a real fuck.
No, yeah, it hurts bitterly. Every season hurt that United doesn't win, it hurts bitterly, to be honest. But that's why I'm just saying that.
Arsenal don't hold ourselves to such high standards. That is so much. We'd be bitter for 15.
Which season did Fergie retire, guys?
Not saying anything.
12, 13 he retired.
I actually don't remember, to be honest.
No, 2013 was his last. So 12, 13 he retired. So if he retired.
But Mike Ashley has been in ownership for very long. Just
2007. Since 2007.
If he retired 12, 13. So I will go with 5th.
Okay.
season 11-12, because 11-12 was when United lost the Premier League to Man City on goal difference.
Okay.
So, if Mazhar's hint is of any use,
it's Newcastle. Newcastle finished fifth in 2011-12. Top scorer, I know, but I'll wait for Shubham.
Malu bhai,
do I get a point for this?
Yeah, yeah, as many things as you all got right, you'll get points for.
So 11, 12, and 5th. So I've already got 2 points.
Potentially. Mazhar could be wrong.
I could be wrong, exactly. I could be wrong. There could be the supreme overconfidence right now. And
if Mazhar is also agreeing with my answer, so I think I'm right. But in terms of top scorer, now 11, 12, who was the top scorer? Yeah? Michu played for Swansea, na?
Swansea. Damn, our Swansea mentions are going up and up. Holy shit. Someone fucking listen from Swansea. God damn it.
I don't know the top scorer. Newcastle players, I don't know.
Mazhar?
Dembaba.
So Mazhar gets all 3 points. Absolutely correct. Honestly, I get comfort when I get the same answers, Mazhar, because then I know my research is correct. I didn't like mess up on the research. Mazhar, all 3 right. That's 3 points for you. Malu, 2 points for you. Gui, that's well 1 point Mali. For you. That's 1 point for you. But it was 11-12. Mazhar, that was a huge hint, man.
I shouldn't have given it.
That was a huge hint.
But I was thinking aloud because I wasn't sure. And I just remember, you know, I wouldn't have gotten it if you didn't say it was Alan Pardew's was the manager. Because I remember his antics when he was manager. He was dancing and celebrating, if you all remember.
Right.
He always had that clipboard with him, though. He had that small pad like Moreno. Yeah.
I just remember him dancing like a maniac.
Especially remember in the League Cup game against United. No, that was Crystal Palace. That was Crystal Palace.
That was with Crystal Palace.
But he was still dancing.
So guys, I have one more fun question and then one just prediction for the group. And then we should be done. Last question. Mazhar, you mentioned this already. Goal. Santiago Muniz playing for Newcastle United, the Toon. Guys, what was the main objective for Newcastle that season? What did they end up getting by the end of that season?
Champions League football.
Okay, and who did they beat? Who did they beat in their last game?
To get Champions League football, they beat. See, you've answered one question. This. The second part, Mazhar will answer.
I actually remember this.
Mazhar, I'm so happy you mentioned goal because that was the question of the next.
I actually know this one. Gui, you want to go first?
From the excitement on Mazhar's face, they either beat Man City or Liverpool.
Why does that?
No.
It's excitement.
United rivals. You know the answer.
Yeah, it's excitement because I actually remember the answer.
I honestly had to look it up and then
This was a do or die game. For qualifying for Europe. That's what I remember.
Ah.
I'm just going to say Liverpool. Like, I don't know why. The only team which comes to mind.
Okay. Malu, you?
As long as it's not Sunderland, please. That's too cliche. Like, I've watched the movie, but even for a movie, it's too cliche.
So, Champions League football.
Are you thinking about who was successful like when goal was made? That's a tough one. I can't even remember when it is made. I literally looked up the question and I can't remember when it's made.
I think the movie released in 2003 or 2002 or something.
I think it was 3. Yeah, I think it was 3. If I'm right.
So during that time, I don't think United... I think United were always in the Champions League.
We were always top 3, man. Top 3 finishers.
I remember the movie seeing David Beckham and stuff like that. So I'm thinking, is it United... the game against United or was it Arsenal also that time were like doing well?
Beckham at that point was in Madrid, just FYI.
So yeah, Beckham was in the movies, but the second movie.
Second,
they got some high flyers, dude. They got like Beckham, they got that whole Galactic.
Raul, Casillas.
Yeah.
Galacticos, exactly.
Roberto Carlos.
Yeah, what a squad, a group.
Sorry, did you say Roberto Carlos? What did I hear?
Roberto. He's Bengali, little known fact. Roberto!
Yeah, so I'll just go with Champions League football. And who did they beat? Liverpool.
Okay, Muzz,
it is Liverpool, boys. It is Liverpool. It was 100% Liverpool.
Guys, 2 points for everybody. 2 points all around. I really fucked myself with this quiz with all the multiple bonus point questions. But I had to give extra because it's Newcastle. Who the fuck knows what the hell is going on in Newcastle? But guys, one final question, just a fun prediction, and we'll see in the future whether we're right or not. Who is going to be one of the first big marquee signings that Newcastle makes? A big name, like a huge name, you know, like City's Carlos Tevez or something like that, you know, or even Robinho, I guess, was a pretty big deal.
Tony Marshall came from France. English press said he had no chance. 50 million down the drain. Tony Marshall scores again. That will be the first big name signing.
As we predicted.
Nathan Ake. Does that count as big? Because honestly, realistically,
no, that's not a marquee signing.
Like, yeah,
no, but that's on there.
Like, I mean, basically puts Newcastle on the world map.
Yeah, yeah. I'm saying much bigger than that, bro. I'm saying bigger than that. I mean, it's weird we accepted Martial, but I guess we'll take it.
I mean, he has a Ballon d'Or clause, so.
That is true. Fair enough.
Let's be a bit more realistic. Massive marquee signing. I don't see anyone, to be very honest, but if at all, I would say 5 years down the line. So I would say a Jude Bellingham.
Damn.
Oh, you're saying five years down the line. I thought this.
I'm saying whatever you want to say.
Project. I'm going by given their project. I don't see people joining them. Actually, it could be. No. It's going to be Pep Guardiola.
I like that answer. I really like that answer. That managers are also on the table. Gui, who you got?
So
hey, this question is going to throw points and all.
No points.
Where 1-2 years down the line, we have to, hey, guys, remember that quiz we did?
See, I think they'll go with the likes of like Raul Jimenez and all these people, okay, the first 2-3 years.
Good, hey, bro, this doesn't count. Nee, I'm saying when they make money, when they start to like sign big people, who will they sign?
Okay, that time, one signing, they will sign this one. What is his name?
Arteta.
Or even Ollie, you never know.
They will sign
Arsenal Fan TV and convert it to Newcastle Fan TV.
That's big money, yeah. YouTube views.
Monetization.
Which we can't clearly achieve.
I know, that's what. This is all coming from jealousy. Gui, who are you thinking of? You said something. Like, you have a name.
Mad Olympiad, bro.
Then give us the hints. We'll guess. We'll tell you the name.
I can't get his name.
Sunil Chhetri.
Left. Bayern. Left back.
Oh, Alaba. Former.
He's got in Madrid now.
Alfonso Davies.
Huh.
He froze right at the time that we
came. What a way to freeze.
Alfonso Davies.
Look at this face. Alfonso Davies, fair enough. So my prediction is Pep Guardiola's relationship with Phil Foden keeps going down the drain, and I think Phil Foden ends up moving. That is my prediction. Maybe not.
Phil Foden's a Manchester boy. He'll come to the red side. Don't worry about it.
Fuck, I honestly prefer Newcastle. Go to Newcastle. Anyway, guys, thanks so much. Really, really fun episode. Let us know your thoughts.
What were the final scores?
I couldn't do the math.
Shubham 7, me 9.
Okay.
Some solid points. I think some solid points. I guess
you're in three of quizzes.
This is Krishnan always. Just gives out free points. Anyway, success quizzing gives out free points. Also.
I think too many bonus points were given out, which was the issue. I think I shot myself in the foot. But anyway, the team that didn't shot themselves in the foot, Newcastle United, looking really great. Let us know your thoughts in the comments, DMs, any way that you want to get it through to us. Do get in touch with us. We also have a website, so do check that out. It has all our episodes. It's going to have some additional sports content. We're still working to add more and more sports content on there. So do check us out. Stay in touch. Leave a like, share, subscribe if you enjoyed this episode. And with that, signing off. Have a great week. If you like this episode, make sure to leave a like and share it with anyone else who might be interested. You can also subscribe on any social media platform that you prefer, and all our links are in the bio. We also have a website with all our episodes, as well as blogs and a whole lot of other sports content. So make sure to check that out as well.